Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. So it's a regularly scheduled weekly episode, and we are in the month of April where we have decided to do an entire month dedicated to bluffing and deduction games.
So slash this social is our deduction.
Slash social deduction. So this is our second episode in the series, and today we are talking about the game called The Resistance.
Yep. The Resistance Matthew, was...
Can you tell us about that?
It was designed by Don Eskridge and published in 2009 by Indie Boards and Cards.
All right. Is that it?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So to give a short description of the game, The Resistance, at the beginning of the game, each player is given a secret identity, either as a member of the anti-authoritarian resistance or as a government spy attempting to thwart the resistance. The game then plays over a number of rounds. Each round, a rotating team leader must assign a number of players to go on a mission. When the mission team is approved by the other players, the players on the mission secretly decide whether the mission will succeed or fail. The resistance can only select to succeed the mission, but the spies have the choice to fail it. If at least one player chooses a fail card, the mission is a total failure. Otherwise, it's a success. The resistance wins after three successful missions, and the spies win after three successful failures. And that is the gist of The Resistance. So let's get a little bit more into the details of how to play the game and the strategies involved in the game.
All right.
So first of all, just to quickly describe in more detail how the whole process works.
Yeah.
So there will be a team leader at the start of a round, and they hand out these little tokens with guns on them to show who they have assigned to the quote-unquote mission. The mission is just an abstract thing. It's not like an actual mechanic or something. You hand these things out and you give them to other players. You could also give them to yourself. And there are these tokens with guns on them. And that notes who's on the mission. And depending on how many players are playing the game and what round you're on of the game, you will hand out between 2 to 5 of these tokens to the players to put 2 to 5 players on this mission. So after you've chosen who you want to be on the mission, everyone gets to vote, and you do not vote anonymously. You'll vote to either approve the assignments or reject the assignments. If there are a majority of players approve the assignments, then the mission starts. If the majority of players reject the assignment or there's a tied vote, then the assignments are rejected and the team leader passes to the next player clockwise. And they get to assign people to the mission to be approved or rejected. So once a team is approved, then everyone who's on the team for the mission is given 2 cards. One of them says succeed, the other says fail, and they secretly and anonymously select one of those 2 cards to go forward as their choice for the mission, and somebody else will take those cards, shuffle them, and then reveal them. And if there's any failures, then the mission is a total failure. But if it's all successes, then the mission succeeds. And then, like I said in the intro, resistance members can only choose to succeed a mission. Spies have the choice to either succeed or fail. Right. So yes. And then after 3 successes or 3 failures, one of the 2 sides win. There's another case where the spies can win, and that is if the mission assignments are rejected 5 times in a row. So if the team that is proposed is rejected 5 times, then the resistance or the spies win.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything else that I should mention about this game? I guess it should be mentioned that there's always more resistance than spies. The spies are always the minority. The spies also know who each other are, because at the beginning of the game, kind of like in Werewolf, after you hand out the assignments, a narrator type person will tell everyone to close their eyes, and then the spies get to open their eyes and identify each other before closing their eyes, and then everyone opening their eyes to start the whole game. It should also be mentioned that you can talk at any point in the game about anything you want.
Right.
You can't show anybody your secret role, whether it's resistance or spy. You can't show anybody that card, but other than that, you can say anything you want.
Yeah.
At any point. So let's talk about strategy then.
All right. Yeah.
So let's see.
I want to echo a sentiment that we had in the Spyfall episode, which is read the table. So, like, we will talk about things that are, like, good behaviors if you're a spy or resistance. But especially if you're a spy, like, looking at how other people are acting is a good way to blend in or make yourself known as, like, a resistance member.
Right. Now, there's one very important thing as a spy that you need to know, because this carries over into all games. And that is that if you are on a mission and you are deciding between success or failure, you have to make the decision quick. I'll help you out. Always choose failure.
Yeah.
Unless you're in the same mission as another spy.
Yeah.
In that case, it's harder. But pretty much every other case, you always pick failure as a spy immediately. Because if you sit there and you decide, being a spy, you're the only type of player that has a decision. And the resistance in this game is just constantly trying to figure out who the spies are. Yeah. That should be mentioned, that there's these two sides, but the gameplay is almost essentially entirely one-sided, and that everybody is claiming to be the resistance and they're claiming to oust the spies. So the one thing that you should do behaviorally is select your failure or success card quickly. What else can we say about the strategy? Moving forward, now that we have that little caveat that it's about reading the table.
So information can be gleaned from, like, any part of the game. One thing is, if you can find one spy, you can probably find the other spy based on who is rejecting what missions.
Right.
Yes.
I have put down that the best way to find people is usually to look at the votes instead of the like what they're saying.
Right, yeah. Because it's, you know, in a spy's best interest to reject a mission that has only resistance. And since the spies know who each other are, then they know who all is resistance as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, looking at what the spy's rejecting or what they're approving, because they wouldn't want to approve a mission with only resistance.
Exactly. So let's paint an example here. So let's say we, in the first round, we're playing a six-player game. The first round has two people, and from that round, there is a failure. So we can assume that one of those two people is a spy. Now, at the next round, we only include one of those two people because maybe they seem particularly trustworthy in their debate after the round, exclaiming that they were not a spy and the other person was a spy. So we put them in the next round with two other people. That's a three-person round. And that assignment passes unanimously. That makes it a good chance that the one person from the first round is a spy, because the spies are agreeing that that this is an okay mission assignment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sort of the gist of it. And we've had games where, like, the only two people to reject the mission, or only two people did reject the mission, which means that two people that rejected it were spies.
Now, in another game we played, towards the end of the game, two people rejected a mission. I claimed that they were spies, and one of them turned out to not be a spy.
Oh, yeah.
But so it's hard. If you're a resistance member and you're voting in kind of an erratic way that doesn't seem to follow the same logic as the other players, then that can make you look like a spy, even if you're not.
Right. We had a player that was, they will reject every mission that they're not a part of, and they weren't necessarily a spy every game they did that.
Yeah. So doing something like that as a spy, it can be a good thing because it makes you unpredictable. But that unpredictability is precisely what you kind of look for to try and find a spy, because they're going to be voting against the interests of the majority.
Yeah, so, as the resistance, you want to be agreeable.
Yeah. If you're in the resistance, yes, you want to do what the rest of the team does, what the rest of the table wants to do. Yeah. You want to kind of follow along with that. And if you're a spy, then you can blend in by doing that.
Yeah. There's a few quick, like, facts I want to bring up.
Okay.
First of all, is that the 3 out of 5 missions required to win on either side is very small. There isn't a lot of room for, like, failing one for your team.
Sure.
So, like, you know, if in the first round the Resistance passes it, then the Spies are already down one round, which is huge. They have to work in overtime immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all is that the Resistance has no reason to act like a spy, while the spy has every reason to act like Resistance. Because, I mean, you want, if you're a Resistance, you want to go on the missions to pass them, so there's no good reason why you would want to act like a spy. So, like, trying to psych people out in that regard doesn't matter. And then the other thing is that since there are always more Resistance than spies, it is more likely that a random person at the table will be Resistance.
Right.
And this gets to a first point that I wanted, or another point I wanted to make, which is the first turn.
Yes, the first turn is very important in this game, because like you said, it's just 3 out of 5, and being up a single point on that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. So
the first turn is very important.
Yeah. So what also is important to note is that even if you're a spy and you put any spy on their mission, people have to pass it in order for you to be able to fail it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like the first step is you want people to pass it, which means you generally don't want to put yourself on the first mission if you are the first mission leader.
Yes.
And this is because, like I said, there's a better chance that a given random person will be Resistance. And a spy wants to guarantee that a spy will be on the mission. But if you put yourself on it, then, I mean, like, there you don't really have a good reason to compared to just giving other people the mission.
Yeah, so here's how I put it. A Resistance leader gets more benefit from a random selection than a spy does. For a spy, it's riskier to randomly assign two other people to the first mission. So that means to a spy, it's better to assign themselves to the first mission or to assign the other spy to the first mission. So if somebody assigns themselves to the first mission, pretty much always reject it.
Yeah.
It's because it's a better situation for the spy than it is for the Resistance. Even if they are Resistance and they're just assigning themselves, just reject it. Because as another Resistance member, you would rather it be a random assignment. Because and here's an important part, that the Resistance don't know who the Resistance are.
Yeah.
So it's best to be a little skeptical in the first rounds as a Resistance member and just vote for the good of the Resistance. It's sort of like a statistical manner rather than based on character.
Yeah, pretty much. And in that regard, I want to say a really quick behavioral thing. Don't deny that you're a spy unless provoked.
Mm-hmm.
So like there are a couple times where somebody would just start off the game saying, I'm not a spy. And to me, it's like, why would you bring that up unless there was a reason to?
Honestly, it's best not to make any claims in the first round before anything has happened because there's no evidence. So, I mean, only the spies would feel the need to do something like that, you know?
Right. Only because the spies would have information to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but they wouldn't obviously use that information. Right. But yeah, there's no reason for a rational Resistance member to declare anything on the first round because there's no evidence.
Right.
And the Resistance needs evidence in order to make their calls.
Yeah.
Now, there's one thing I have, and that is that it's better to I was going to say something, but here's what I'll say. It's always keep in mind that there's multiple spies, in at least if you're playing a game with multiple spies, because I think maybe in a 4-player game there's only one spy, but in a 6-player game like we played, I think the minimum is 5, so there's probably always 2 spies. So always remember that there's 2 spies, because I think when we played frequently we got too caught up in trying to discern one of the spies without taking into account who the other spy might be.
Right.
So, like, for example, we'd play the first round. It had 2 people on the mission and we get 1 failure. So rather than so we would just get so wrapped up in trying to use the rest of the rounds to discern which of those 2 people from the first round was the spy. But then we'd focus too much on that and not enough on who the other spy was, and then they'd be able to sneak in an extra failure somewhere along the game in order to take it to three failures. That happened twice.
Yeah.
So if don't get wrapped up, don't get hyper focused on just one spy. I think, and this will go to the point that I was going to make earlier, and that it's better to, at least after the first round, it's best to just eliminate any chance of a potential spy from mission assignments.
Yeah.
So if there's two people in the first round and one of them might be a spy because there was a failure, just don't assign either of them and try to figure out who the other spy might be.
Yep.
Let's see. And as a resistance, pay close attention to the votes, because there's a lot of meaning in the votes. I mean, you can say anything and it doesn't matter what you say, like mechanically doesn't matter. It will only possibly convince people not to, or to put you, it'll convince people to put you on a mission or to not put you on a mission. And maybe convince them to trust you a little bit, but mechanically the votes have a great deal of importance. And so that's one place where you have to be honest to who you are. And as things come down to the wire, it'll become more and more evident. Like when the resistance has two wins, the spies have no choice but to vote for a good outcome for them. So, and when the spies are just one win away, they still might just be a little eager to end the game.
Yeah.
So pay close attentions kind of in those important swingy moments.
Yeah.
Because that's when they actually mean something.
Yeah.
Do you have any other strategy mentions?
Nope.
Yeah. I think the gist of it for the spy, if you had to make a gist of it, it would just be to act like resistance. Just be as resistance as you can be as a spy.
Yeah.
And that's about it. So can we talk about the design now?
Yes, let's do that.
All right. So what do you have to say about the design?
So first of all, there's a really important rule in the game, which is that you can talk at any time. And we say it's important not just because, you know, it lets you talk at any time, but because its existence in the rule book tells you to talk at any time. So basically, by putting that rule in the rule book, it subtly encourages players to actually talk. You know, if it wasn't in there, it might be, you know, kind of understood that you can talk at any time and bluff your way around things.
Right.
But who would actually talk?
It's like, look, think about
its inception.
Think about Catan, where it says you can trade your resources with other players at any time. Like, there's no rules in other games with resources that says you can't trade resources. And I mean, I know people that trade resources in like Monopoly. So
Monopoly.
So I guess
trading,
what I'm saying
though,
is it does. Oh,
yeah,
well,
you can trade properties.
But like some people will just like give money away or something.
Oh, sure.
Like that. Monopoly has trading. So I'm thinking like other games with resources, there's no rules that say you can't trade them. So, but I've never seen anyone try in those games. But if it's a rule in the rule book that says, hey, you can trade if you want, then it comes up a lot. And it's a similar thing with talking in this game.
Right. And I mean, you could argue that like by presenting itself as a deduction game with so many unknown variables you have to figure out, you could argue like it's implied that you're supposed to talk. But just by saying you can, it kind of like psychologically kind of flips a switch and tells players just straight up to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like what I said earlier, it's like Inception, where like you might not have had that idea, but now that it brings it up, oh, that sounds like a good idea. You know, it encourages people to talk, almost forces it.
Right.
It's not just about, you know, it doesn't say you can't. It's like, by being there, it makes it in the front of your brain.
I would say compared to Spyfall, Spyfall had a ton of mechanics that were stacked up for the spy's favor to make the spy's job a little more easy. But it seems like in this game, it's sort of the opposite. A lot of the ways that the game is balanced is stacked up against the resistance or against the spies.
Yeah. Except for one thing, I think.
Okay.
Which is that the spies know who each other are.
True.
I think that's the one thing, is the Resistance, any member of the Resistance is in cold, you know, they don't know anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the spies knowing each other is an interesting thing, because it helps them coordinate, but it's also like, one interesting part about social deduction games is that, or these bluffing and deduction games that have this like hidden traitor mechanic, is that the hidden traitor usually only knows one thing, and that's that they're the traitor. And having that little nugget of information and holding on to it and being responsible for it can be not a stressful thing, but it can provide a lot of tension for the person that has it. Like when you first glimpse at your secret role in games like these, and you see that you are the hidden traitor, you know, you feel a little something inside you well up. That's like, ooh, this is going to be interesting. Yeah. I really got to think now. I really got to work for this. But what this game does on top of that is that it gives you two nuggets. It gives you the first nugget where you say like, oh geez, I'm the spy. And then it gives you the second nugget like, oh geez, I know they're the spy. And so, I don't know, it adds a lot more tension, and a lot more depth to the strategy, because not only is this about like how you utilize your nugget of information, which is usually just to try to keep it hidden, but then there's how do you utilize the other nugget of information. And in this game, in the rule book, it specifically states that you can, as an option, turn on your fellow spy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, it can be sort of a problem in these types of games of, like, putting a huge weight on your shoulders if you're the hidden traitor.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you haven't been it for, like, the current gameplay session. Like, it feels like it's a whole lot of responsibility you have to take up.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that making it so that there's guaranteed to be one other traitor does kind of help split that burden. You mm-hmm. know, like, there's a bit of solace in seeing another person that you can work alongside. But I do agree that just having that information also makes it easier to slip up and make mistakes.
So I do know. Like how in this game, it seems like, so if you're the traitor in the first ever play session of this game, then it can feel a little tense and a little like things are stacked against you. Just from my own personal experiences, that's how it felt when I was the traitor the very first time that I played this game. But then as I played it, and I spent more rounds with the Resistance, I realized just how easy it is to blend in with other Resistance.
Yeah.
This game, I guess, for some reason, it creates... I wonder what that reason is. It creates this environment that is very testy and involves a lot of people accusing each other. And there's a very difficult... it's a very difficult time trying to decide, figure out who exactly is for and against you in this game.
I actually have something I want to bring up in that regard, which is that while games like Werewolf, for example, are kind of light on mechanics and rely a lot more on inferring the like reasons behind what people do, Resistance has these different gates that go into any given mission. And, you know, it's like first you have to give people the mission tokens and then people have to approve or reject, and then people have to pass or fail the mission. And I think part of that is that like any one small difference in any of those steps can have huge consequences, you know, whether or not you put a spy on a team, or whether or not you approve or reject can be huge, because you could be the difference between total approval or rejection. And by having that that like huge difference between those and that very tight possibility that something bad can happen, it kind of instills you with paranoia, which I think is part of why accusations go around left and right. But also that for either side, or for the Resistance, you feel like you have to weed out the spies, or else you'll never get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, you kind of get desperate for information.
So talking about these gates, that this kind of and comparing it to Werewolf, I want to characterize the kind of player that would enjoy playing these games. Okay, so Werewolf, the type of character that would enjoy playing that game is like a mentalist, somebody who just by talking and hearing people's words and debating and sussing out lies and identifying lies and stuff like that. Because there's not a lot of actions that you witness in that game. You just close your eyes, and then unless you're the werewolf, you wake them up and you see who's dead. And then you just have to talk it out with everybody else. But this game is more like a Sherlock Holmes type.
I was going to say Sherlock.
Exactly. Somebody who looks at like physical evidence and tries to discern the motives behind it.
Yeah.
And because this game, so when I first played this game and I read the rules, it seemed like just a lot of steps just to get to the werewolf part where somebody dies, or the werewolf part where we fail a mission. And so all those steps seemed a little bit bureaucratic, I guess. It's like, oh, you got to choose the assignments, and then you have to approve the assignments. And if you reject, you got to choose the assignments again, and then those get approved. Okay, now they're approved. Now everybody gets a card, and they secretly do this. And this part is secret, and this part isn't secret, and this part is, you know, whatever, and you talk the whole time. So it seems like a little too complicated to get to the point where either there's a success or a failure. And then all of the talking happens after that to determine who it is. But I mean, thinking of it in this way and comparing it to Werewolf, you see that it's more like all of these steps are just extra moments where anyone can try and find some extra motive from a player.
Yeah. So
who somebody assigns as the team leader, you can try and find something in there. Like if the team leader assigns a certain person a couple times, you might think like, oh, then that guy's a spy and they're assigning their buddy spy. You determine who's a spy from the way that they approve or reject. If there's a unanimous approval, that means there's definitely a spy on this mission. If there's a split vote, then that means there probably isn't a spy on the mission.
Right.
Or there's a split vote. There might be a potential spy, and there's a couple people that are not ready to trust them. And then it comes to just who's on the mission, and then how the mission goes. You can definitely find out that 1/3 of those people are a spy or something along those lines. So this game is better for a team of players that don't really want to talk it out and bluff as much. They'd rather it's more for the deduction side instead of the bluffing side of the spectrum.
Yeah, or more deduction than social, because like,
sure,
I don't like Werewolf that much just because I don't like how like charismatic you have to be or like forceful of a talker you have to be. Mm-hmm. But the fact that in Resistance it gives you these tools and the mechanics that you can use to deduce things or, you know, bluff things or figure things out, like that is more friendly for people like me who are better at analyzing the reasons behind those actions in that regard. So it kind of allows for either a different, like you said, or just more player types. You know, yeah. You can still be a fast talker in Resistance.
One thing you can also be in the Resistance is a no talker.
Yeah.
You can be somebody who sits back, because it's feasible to say that this person who's just sitting back very quietly, not saying anything, is just trying to analyze all the small decisions that are being made every round. Of course, they could also be just a spy that's not trying to draw attention to themselves, which is a perfectly reasonable thing. But if you're playing a game that's almost all talking it out and bluffing and deducing from conversation, and you're the quiet one, then you're too obvious and people will call you out like, eh, not saying much, aren't you? In this game, you don't really have to say anything until you're accused of being a spy.
Yeah. I do think it's also interesting that by having all these elements of the mechanics that come from your role, or like, you know, stem from whether or not you're a spy or resistance, a lot of the things in the game end up being like false 50-50s. So like you said, like, you know, they are sitting still, you know, just analyzing things. They're the resistance, or they don't want to say anything. They're the spy. There's like a lot of these sort of traps in the game where like it will provide you with a situation where it's an either or, but mm-hmm. it's impossible to get a definite answer from it because right. you still don't know what the person's, you know, role is. And I think having things like, you know, whether or not you can pass or fail being tied to that role, I think is good just because, like, it makes it more centered around that hidden role. Like, I'm sure the designers tried to tie the mechanics back into the spy resistance thing as much as they could just because, you know, it stays focused that way. Like, mm-hmm. everything is centered around this one thing. It has direction.
I want to bring up, and this is actually a point I forgot from the strategy section, but it's also a part of the design design section, I guess. And that is how you can use the assignments as the team leader as a way to sort of force the hand of a spy. So the way that I saw it happening in our game was there was a point where the team leader was rotating around for a turn. I think it skipped over two people, and then it came to you. And what I thought you were doing what I thought you were doing, but if you had done sort of the strategy that I was sort of formulating on the spot, the idea was that I would put a potential spy that I had been suspicious of being a spy in the assignment. And then I'd assign just a couple other people, probably one other person that's kind of been trustworthy for part of the game. And then as the team leader, I was going to reject that assignment because what I wanted to do as the team leader was assign someone that I thought was a spy and then try and see if they get voted in nearly unanimously. I would reject because I don't want them to be in. And if two other people reject, then in a six-player game, it won't happen. It'll keep passing. But that was just another way to kind of deduce another person. And so not only are these little decisions, getting back to the design of the game, these little decisions aren't just ways to deduce information. They're also tools to draw information out.
Right. Players have a lot of agency in this game. Like you said, like you can force people to do things using the mechanics of the game. Mm-hmm. Also, just the fact that, like I said, a single difference of an approval or rejection is huge. Like, it doesn't feel like any player is weaker than the others. Even mm-hmm. if, like, you know, the spies haven't stacked against them, every player still has the same options, and those options have huge consequences. I think it helps keep players invested, because on one hand, any other player could ruin the whole thing. On the other hand, they do have the strength to combat that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it goes without saying that it's cool that this is a social deduction game where everybody stays in the game until it ends.
Yeah.
Unlike, you know, Mafia and Werewolf, where people get eliminated one by one and then they can't play the game anymore.
Right, yeah.
And then I think at least Werewolf has probably implemented like ways that the deceased can interact with the game. Or the jailed members. I actually don't know which is the right terminology for that game. But
dead.
Dead, yes. You know, maybe they did, but this game doesn't need like any extra fancy stuff added on. It's just like everyone's in the game just due to the way that the mission success, failure, win condition keeps people in the game.
Right. I guess the only other thing I want to bring up is that I like the theming of this game, if only because I like the irony present in like a very bureaucratic rebellion against a like fascist government.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the fact that like the rebellion having no clear like trust in anybody basically makes it a moot point. I don't know. I think it's funny.
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, the theme could have gone either way, you know. It could have been like the government is trying to go on these missions and these implemented resistance people are trying to thwart them. But instead it's this way and everyone wants to be the resistance.
Right, though it does still portray the game's theme within the gameplay narrative. that the Resistance is against the spies, and while they want to stop the spies, they have to really figure things out so that they can band together. Like, spies are the like enemy both in the narrative and for the most part in the gameplay.
Right.
And so you have to resist the spies at your table in order to win the game.
Right. The gameplay could have just as easily ended up being something where, like, people are just trying to find out which team somebody is on. But in the end, it plays out everybody wants to look like they're in the Resistance.
And the Resistance wants to band together, like I was saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else design-wise to talk about?
Nope.
I am also done with my notes, so that will be the end of our pretty short episode on the Resistance. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
I
was going to say, one game like this that I can recommend is Secret Hitler. It has a very similar, like, leader that gets passed around, then appoints somebody, and then people vote or reject for it. I think it has a bit more room for failure in terms of, like, when people are, or how many times you have to lose before you lose the game, or how many times you have to succeed before you win the game. And likewise, it also has some room for giving people more options for if they pass or succeed stuff or fail or whatever. So check it out if you can.
Gotcha. And then have you played Avalon? Is that the name of the game?
Yeah, that's the re-implementation sequel spinoff of The Resistance.
Right. The Resistance : Avalon is a rethemed version of The Resistance, though it ranks higher on Board Game Geek than the original Resistance. I think there's some slight changes to it, but I don't know what they are because I haven't played it. All right. Thank you for listening to our episode on The Resistance. If you'd like, you can follow us on any podcasting platform. You can also follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and tagged so that you can find an episode about a game that you're interested in hearing our thoughts on there. We also have a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where we have our cool merch that has our cool logos on it that you can purchase and rep all around town or whatever type of living area you live in.
Right.
Matt plugs.
All right. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream on weekdays from about 10 or 11 a.m. Central Time to 2 or 3 p.m. Central Time. And I stream a lot of roguelites, platformers, fighting games, other competitive games, other fun stuff. I've been playing a lot of Enter the Gungeon recently because that expansion came out. And speaking of which, I write articles and blog posts on the BGBcast website under the Episodes and Articles tab. And my next article will be over Enter the Gungeon and some of its design.
All right. So be on the lookout for that. That does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.